So welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming on this Independence Day weekend. And listening to the opening verse just now, hearing words in the verse about freedom and liberation, it reminded me again that even though in our American lexicon, in our American culture, we do often, especially this weekend, hear words about freedom, liberty, we also hear the same words in Buddhism. I think the problem for our country is that the understanding of freedom and liberty and things like that are only defined in a social political way and not in a very meaningful personal way. Because the freedom, you know, to participate in a democratic system, the freedom to elect our own representatives, the freedom to rule ourselves, the freedom to consume what we want, is a very limited freedom if there isn't really a deep personal freedom. And if there isn't a deep personal freedom, a deep personal liberation, then that social political freedom, as we see in our country these days, doesn't become a very functional thing. It actually become very dysfunctional. And rather than creating the means for greater happiness, the pursuit of happiness, the greatest happiness for beings in our country, may actually turn into the opposite. Because that personal freedom that we talk about in our meditative tradition is a freedom where our minds are free of their conditioning, of their historical personal conditioning. Our minds are free of all the emotional afflictions that so much distort one's capacity to see clearly. Our minds are free of all their self-centered, egotistical delusions. So we are free to really contemplate the needs and the well-being of our society and the people who live in it. So without that inner understanding and that inner freedom, and I'm not just talking about a freedom of, you know, highly developed the Buddhas, but a kind of freedom that comes from people who are undertaking that sort of personal spiritual journey to be freer people, kinder people, more open, accepting people, more loving people, right? If that is not part of the culture, then we see giving people various types of political, social freedoms just becomes just another kind of distortion that can easily be manipulated and controlled without that inner sense of knowing who one is, and just having that personal freedom, that liberation, that one understands even one's own ideas and beliefs are simply no more than that. They're nothing intrinsic, they're nothing solid, they're nothing real, they're nothing that is not subject to change. So anyway, interesting. On a weekend like this, to contemplate and reflect on these deeper truths of what it really means to be a free person, and what it really means to be a liberated person, and what it really means to live in a free society. These are important issues, and I think, you know, people who follow a meditative spiritual path have a lot to say, a lot to contribute to the civil dialogue, especially as we see the way it's unfolding in our country and the world. The bringing into the social political realm, not religion, but basic human values and understanding that are so ancient, traditional, and common to everybody, no matter what their religious belief, non-religious belief, would be so beneficial. So I welcome everybody on this Independence Day weekend. Is there anybody who is their first time here this morning? Oh, okay. So, good. So usually we meet upstairs in our meditation hall, but we're having a air conditioning minor problem that needs a part. So that's why we're down here. So before I get into the more formal talk, I would like to offer an opportunity for people who are new or old, if anybody has any questions. It's important that we have an opportunity to ask questions, and to make sure our understanding of the meditative practices, a lot of us these days read books, surf the internet, we get lots of information, but how what this stuff really means and how really to practice it and put it into actualization in our life is often not so clear. So please don't be shy if anybody has any questions about, again, what we've done here this morning, or just about practice in their daily life. Please feel free to ask a question now. Okay, no one has any questions. Somebody in the back has a question. Yes.
I've been experiencing sort of alternating anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, with practice, with meditation and mindfulness, suggestions on meditating with depression.
Well, again, so the question is about what in Buddhism is called afflictive mind states. Buddhism, from a psychological point of view, is oriented toward a mind that is very open, very spacious, very relaxed, very clear, and is free of all the waves of deep emotionality, especially the ones that are afflictive, which are emotionally afflictive, right? And we could say depression, sadness, despair, and again, we're not talking about the normal stuff, but we're talking about a chronic condition, or else chronically to live in fear and worry. We would call these afflictive mind states. They afflict the natural well-being of the mind, and the mind is sick. Not the way we usually say sick. But I mean, in the same way our body is sick, we know when our body is healthy, right? How do we feel when a body is healthy? We feel good. We feel energetic, right? So, I mean, we don't have any physical problems. But when we are sick, we know it, don't we? Because we feel differently. And in the same way, we need to have that same understanding about our mind. Our mind has the capacity for health. And as I said earlier, the healthy mind is an open, clear, energetic mind, free of emotional afflictions. So when it is not like that, then we would say our mind is sick. Is that clear? And it's important to understand that, that Buddhism, from a psychological point of view, posits a state of mental health. Right? Western psychology posits not having psychopathology or not having a more significant kind of mental pathologies. That's the focus, right? Getting rid of those. But it really doesn't have a sense. What is a healthy human being? Right? A mentally healthy human being. Buddhism has always, from the time of the Buddha, because the Buddha, in his Great Awakening and in his teachings, basically promulgated a model of what it means to be a healthy human being in one's actions, in one's speech, and most importantly, in one's mind. So it's important to understand that in this Buddhist tradition, we have a very highly developed model of what it means to be a healthy human being, what are the characteristics of a healthy human being's mind and speech and actions of body, and also a very comprehensive a formulation of practices that help one realize that and free one of one's afflictions. So obviously, what's called depression and obviously what's called anxiety, again, are significant interferences with one's well-being. And I know the speaker, Eddie, who asked the questions, and he often, he's dealt with these things, and we've talked about it many times. So Eddie, you just need to really just follow the things we've talked about. You don't need more information. Our problem is we are information junkies. We are technique junkies. We're always looking, you know, we haven't even mastered the first technique we were taught. We haven't mastered the first teachings in the book we've read. We just continue reading. And we think the more teachings we read and the more advice we get, the better off we'll be. As it is said in Zen, you can load a donkey with a load of the most knowledgeable, wise books in the world, but that donkey is still a donkey. That's not directed to you. That is directed to all of us. We think by loading ourselves up with teachings and books and all that, that somehow we are changing. We are not changing. We are just like that donkey. Right? The spiritual path is a path of transformation. The healing and transformation comes because we read the books, we digest the information in the books, and most importantly, we practice, so we have realization. We have actualization. That is what we want. And in most of the cases, the reason those of us who have been at it for many years don't have absolute and complete realization is because why? Because we don't practice enough. We don't practice in the way we've been taught. We don't follow the instructions we have received. I assure you, Eddie, if you follow the instructions you have received, you will find great relief. But let me just say, meditation is not a panacea. People think meditation is the answer to everything. It is not. It is certainly an essential part of a spiritual path of transformation. But you know, in the Buddha's path of liberation, it's an eightfold path, of which you know, there are many parts, of which mindfulness and meditation and insight are very key. But that's not all. And you know, for example, depression. Is often, like anxiety, is often, as I said, a disease. It's a thought disease. Our thinking is skewed. Our thinking is distorted, right? So oftentimes, if when you're meditating, all you're doing is ruminating on these distorted thinking, right, then it's not very helpful, is it? And we need to be clear. It's not very helpful. Actually, when I used to be more clinically involved, I would tell people, no, you should not be meditating, because from what you tell me, all you're doing when you're meditating is just, again, you know, ruminating and regurgitating on these dysfunctional thinking. Your mind is not strong enough to handle this. So it'd be better if you did a walking meditation, something more physical, where you got away from your thoughts, right? And sometimes a more active kind of meditation, mindfulness meditation that is more physical. It gets you out of your mental processes is helpful. Is that clear? So again, that's why traditionally, we don't prescribe medicines for ourselves. Right? We go to an expert who prescribes for us, right? I mean, they tell us the medication we need, and they tell us the right therapeutic dose. In the same way, we shouldn't just be gobbling spiritual teachings and practices and just consuming them without, having, especially if we have, problems in our mind and bodies that are more significant. I mean, we should make sure that the spiritual meditative mindfulness medicine we're taking is really appropriate for us and can be helpful. Is that clear? So this is very important. And again, that's why it's important, especially if one's serious about this path, that one works with a mentor, because at a certain point, especially if our own thinking is very distorted, then we will distort even our thinking in relationship to the spiritual path. The important thing is if we have been given teachings and practices by our mentor, and we trust that mentor, then the important thing is, am I carrying out the practices as instructed? In the same way, if a physician or someone has given us a prescription, am I taking it the way I was supposed to take it? Do I just take it when I want? Sometimes I take it, sometimes I don't take it. Sometimes I double up on the dose, sometimes I skip a dose, and then I wonder why I'm not getting better. It could be a reason, and it could be us. Any other questions about meditation, spiritual practice? Yes.
Letting go.
Letting go.
It's an interesting concept, but it seems to interfere with making plans to live a mindful life. It seems.
Now, why is that? So Thomas's thing is, we're instructed to let go. But somehow he's saying, but letting go gets in the way of kind of living a normal life. But why, can you just go a little further? How do you find that it gets in the way of?
In daily life.
Daily life.
Daily practice of mindfulness.
Yes.
Because we all have to be out in public. We have to make plans on how we will live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Letting go tends to make me think that we don't plan.
So Thomas's question is, hey, seems to me from my understanding that letting go kind of means you let go of everything, but life, one has to make plans, one has to do this. And so how does one, if one is not, living in a cave somewhere in the mountains or isolated, how does one live in the world and let go? Well, actually, that's what I was going to talk about today, Thomas. Using that, we will jump right in. You don't work for the NSA, you haven't been tapping much. first quote, and then we'll get into letting go. If you understand, things are just as they are. If you do not understand, things are just as they are. this is a little twist. We weren't expecting that, were we? We were expecting something else. So this is very important. If you understand, things are just as they are. If you do not understand, things are just as they are. So this is important. What does this mean? That things are just as they are. whether we understand that or not, right, all that changes is our understanding. But, right, you know, whether I understand this is a flower or I don't understand it's a flower, or whether I like it or don't like it, or whatever my opinion and or not opinion about this, in no way does that change this, does it? Right? This is just this. And whether I think these are real, solid, permanent things that will last forever, or whether I understand, no, these are impermanent, temporary things and are subject to change and birth and death, and are, you know, in the process of, even though they are now flowering, in a few days they will be wilting, and in a couple of days they will be gone. You know, that is the truth, isn't it, of this? The only difference is, do I understand that is the truth, or do I not understand that is the truth? Is that clear? So, the problem is always where? In us. Life is just as it is, right? Molly. Now, whether you think Molly's a great person, or whether you think she's a terrible person, whether you're very attached to Molly and want her to stay the same always and or forever, and if you understand that no, Molly is subject to birth and death and change and all that, and she's, whether you understand that or don't understand it, Molly is still Molly, and Molly will still unfold the way Molly unfolds. Is that clear? The only difference is whether we understand it or not, but that's big. So this is important because some people have some idea that spiritual understanding, enlightenment, somehow changes everything. No, nothing changes, other than you either get it or you don't get it. But the it never changes. So that makes it simpler. Right? Again, if I think, if I understand that these flowers are just temporary manifestations, that they are subject to impermanence, that there's nothing solid there, it's just a bunch of petals and stems and all that, and there's really nothing of any permanent solid entity there at all, right? Then I can appreciate them right now, but I will not in any way be disheartened, depressed, right? If I come back in a few days and they don't look the way they do, nor will I be anxious, right? Worried. What's going to happen to this poor flower when it starts to wilt? You know, it could get very depressed, couldn't it? As it realizes its mortality. Like even flowers age, right? Just like we do. So maybe I could worry that this poor flower is going to go through some kind of personal crisis. So I could get very anxious and worried. I could get very depressed. I could get all kinds of... But that would all come why? Because I don't understand. If I understand, I can appreciate the flower the way it is now, and I can appreciate it when it wilts, and I can appreciate that if I know how to compost and things like that, it can become part of the earth and give life to new flowers and vegetables. I can understand all that. If I don't understand it, I can have all kinds of emotional affliction. Is that clear? If you understand, things are just as they are, even if you don't understand, things are just as they are. Things don't change. Our understanding changes. Now, a couple of Zen quotes from Thomas. I do like this one. Let go or be dragged. I thought that was really aggressive. Five words. Let go or be dragged. Right? A galloping horse is running by. Right? You can grab onto it. And if you grab onto it, you can be taken for a ride. Right? In other words, you can be dragged. or you can let go and not be trapped. Now, this letting go, I think, is very important, as Thomas said, to really understand this clearly. So, there is in Buddhism two ways of looking at things, right? One is what we might call, just for the sake of definition, the external world, right? So all of us have an external world, right? So Thomas, for you know, the external world is what your senses perceive, right? So you see anything you see, right? We at least in the world of duality, you perceive as outside yourself, right? There's the external world, things you see, sounds you hear, smells you smell, things you may taste, right? And all that. So that's everybody, you know, that's the world, right? The external world. Right? And then we have something for most of us we call our internal world, right? And this is the private world that nobody can see but you, right? These are your thoughts. These are your ideas, these are your perceptions, these are your memories, these are your fantasies, these are your wishes, these are your, you know, that's your, all your internal world, right? Nobody can see them but you. Is that clear? And even if you go to scientists and they hook you up, right, all they'll see is what? Electrical blips or chemical reactions or something, but they won't know what you're thinking, will they? Only we know what we're thinking. That's our internal world. Okay? So we have this internal world and we have this external world. So that is the world. Now, the external world, which is this world, is unfolding according to its own causes and conditions. So let's say there are 50 or 60 people here this morning. Everybody in here has their own causes and conditions, right? Everybody, how they spend the rest of the day, how they spend the rest of their life, you know, there's lots of causes and conditions that are affecting that. Is that clear? As well as the whole world, political issues, social economic issues, everything is just an unfolding. The weather, climate, it's going to rain today, right? That's all the unfolding, right? Okay? Of the external world. Lots and lots of variables, right? As well as we have this internal world. The interesting thing is about the internal world is the internal world of our thoughts and our perceptions is the way we are thinking about this. Is that clear? That's what's going on in there. We are labeling everything we see. We are liking it or not liking it. We're attracted by it. We're not attracted by it. Right? Right? And then we keep building that, which then to kind of it becomes several sentences. Then we create stories, interpretations, perceptions, right? Dramas, melodramas, right? That's all going on where? Inside our mind, and it's about, usually about the external life or about ourselves in relationship to the external life. But can you see, that's all going on inside us. But it's based on this world that we're perceiving through our senses, what we see, right? Okay? Now, what's the problem with all that, Thomas? So we have this endless external world, always changing, right? Always different. Things all, every moment to moment, every day, things are different. Even if we go to the same job, it's just, we're going to come together in a different way. As well as internally, our thoughts, our feelings, our perceptions are also what? Constantly changing, right? We may think about this one day, we may think about this differently another day. We may change our mind in 5 minutes. Right? Is that clear? So we have this endless unfolding of experience that is constantly changing. Right? That's the galloping horse. But many of us don't like that, do we? We want things how? We want things to stay the same. But that's really not true. We only want the things that we like to stay the same. Things that we don't like, we want those to change. So we cheat. You see, we're cheaters at this. We're not consistent. Right? So the truth is, Thomas, for most of us in our thinking about letting go, we go, well, I got to let go of the things that I really don't like, that are causing me problems. But I definitely want to hold on to the things, right? But we don't realize we're getting dragged by both. Now, while in most of the writings that go on about letting go, and again, letting go is something that, you know, people talk about all the time, it's really mostly practiced as kind of a psychological technique, right? You know, there's a situation going on, a personal situation. I understand that the reason I'm obsessing about it all the time and going over it is really not really very helpful. You know what I'm saying? So I really say to myself, well, I gotta let go of this. But then usually we milk it as much as we can until we finally get so sick of it, we can put it down. Right? And then we kind of, we're always kind of working through it. You know what I mean? And there are many people, they're always working on something. I'm trying to let go of this one, or I just let go of that one. Oh, but here's another one. You know what I mean? It's kind of an endless process. Okay? Because it is focused on the external world, and it has to do with kind of talking ourselves out of it. You know what I mean? It's a process. It's like first we talk ourselves into it, and then we spend a lot of time talking ourselves out of it. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, like, you know, we're doing both. Right. We talk ourselves into grabbing onto the horse, and then as it's dragging us along, we talk ourselves, I don't know if I really want to be dragged along, but I guess I probably shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Until finally one day, we after we get battered around enough, we go, I better let go of this. Right? So it's that kind of thing. Which is good. It's one way of doing it. But there's another way, which is the way of understanding. And the way of understanding is that one understands clearly that everything in this world is subject to impermanence and change. Nothing is solid, everything is unfolding, so to hold on to anything in a sense of wanting it to stay the same is like grabbing onto, you know, something that is moving and wanting it to be stable, like the horse. It will only lead to suffering. Whether it's good or bad. Okay. Now, that process of attaching is fundamentally a mental process, right? In other words, we are in our own minds, we are attaching to something. We are wanting something, whether it's a taste, or it's a sight, or it's experience, or it's a relationship, or whatever it is, we have decided, I want that to stay just the way it is and last. So it is basically a distortion of thinking. We act it out in the world of relationship, but the distortion is in our own minds. When we understand that it is in our own minds and we liberate our mind, because our mind also is, again, thoughts are just arising and passing, right? Everybody noticed that who meditated for a half hour this morning? What did you notice about your thoughts? Solid and stable? No, totally whacked out. They come and they go, and they come and they go, and they're about this, and then they're about that, and then, right? That's just the way they are. So therefore, when one learns to just let them go, and remain in mindfulness, one is much easier than when one enters the world, the public world, as Thomas talked about, to practice the same. Not the way we usually do it, which is situation to situation, right? But consistent. Because one understands this world is just the way it is. Things are just as they are. She is just who she is. He is just who she is. He is. Life is just what it is. Right? That's the truth, isn't it? Anybody disagree with that? See, I just want to go on record. At 11:26 on Sunday morning, all of us here, hopefully, are in reality. How does it feel? You see, we have these moments of reality, of clarity, where we say, oh yeah, that is the way it is, yeah. Right? Yeah, I can understand why things are in this situation, because he's the way he is, and she's the way he is, and this is what's happened and brought us to the situation, and brought them to the situation, whether that's good or bad, and I also know that that is subject to change. How's it going to change? I really don't know, do you? We don't know. So even our ideas about life are not in any way stable. They're just ideas. So again, Thomas, we enter life, right? And there may be situations in life where there has to be some planning. And so, we make do some planning. But we're not attached to that planning because we know that planning is going on where? In the air. It's not real. Now, this is a big deal to a lot of people. So let me just say, very clearly, going on record, our thoughts about reality are not real. They're just thoughts. Right. Can anybody find a thought in their mind, grab it, and take it out and show the rest of us? Can you do that? I'll give $100 to somebody right now. Take your thought out and show me this solid, real thing, including Ed. Why are you laughing, Tom? Why do you laugh when I say bring it out, the thought?
It's impossible.
It's not impossible. It's also ridiculous. Because why is it impossible and ridiculous? Because thoughts are what? They're just mental events, and they're not solid. They're not real. They just come and go. And when you look right at one, they just disappear. That's just the way they are. And yet, our whole emotional life is based on it. Is that clear? So again, you don't have to leave the world to practice this. Actually, the teaching, if you live in a cave all by yourself, you don't have to practice letting go. Right? Letting go is for people like us who live in the world. Who live in the world of endless change and relationship and coming and going and work and, global warming, and Democrats and Republicans and, it's a teaching for us. So we can be in this world, right? And yet, be calm, be balanced. How do we do that? Because we understand how things are, and therefore we let go. Letting go means what? We just let things be. Right? I let Molly be Molly. I let Thomas be Thomas. I let Eddie be Eddie. Would you want me to control you? No. Right? You want to be free to be Thomas, right? And Thomas's life will unfold according to the way Thomas does it. If I think I can control you or should control you, then I've entered into the world of manipulation. My job is to manipulate. Do people like it when somebody else is trying to manipulate them? Do we like it?
No.
Do people like you when you're manipulating and controlling them? No.
Yeah.
So again, we're having a moment of sanity here right now. Hopefully we will take this sanity into our life. That's practice. So hearing the teachings is like reading the teachings. It's the first step, but it's only the first step. They have to be chewed on, thought about, reflected on, digested, and then practiced. The more we practice, the better we will get it. But if it only stays here, you go, hey, gee, that was a good talk this morning. It was even humorous. I really like that. You know? And then we go out and we just continue doing the same stuff. That doesn't benefit anyone, does it? Have a question?
So I'm practicing deep listening here, and my understanding is so far beyond intellectual is I feel like the quality of the flowers of air, the quality of the flowers improve. They're all flowers of air, thoughts.
Right? Yeah. So she said that's a Buddhist expression. Thoughts are like flowers in air, or flowers of air. In other words, there may be like skywriting or something. You know, it appears, but there's no substance there.
Right. So I was listening to you speaking with a member last week, and she was talking about the fact that she doesn't have to. She's conflicted with liking everybody or not liking. She's conflicted by that. So that was good because the understanding or the slowing down and allowing spaciousness creates better quality in the flowers. Mm-hmm. So when thoughts are coming and going, the flowers are more selective. They improve with slowing down and creating that spaciousness. And the mind isn't running amok.
Right.
Does that make sense? So
yeah.
So there isn't a gloom and doom with the fact that there's sort of a personality conflict with the person. It's just reality is reality. So there's no labeling. It's kind of like the flowers of air are at ease.
Yeah, so I think what Molly is saying, and she's referring to a couple of weeks ago, I think asked a question about, so now she thinks because she's practicing Buddhism, she has to like everybody, and there was somebody at work that she just didn't like. So what about that? And Molly's saying, as you practice more and your mindfulness deepens, are you able to be in the world of all this coming and going and changing and liking and disliking, and there's greater space and ease even when one's participating. And that's definitely true. Again, just because we practice Buddhism and are on a spiritual path doesn't mean everything's wonderful, right? I mean, the world's a mess. And there are many good people in this world, and there are many not so good people in this world. And there are people who have certain types of values, and there are people who have other types of values. And there are people who see the purpose of life is to nurture life and help other beings, and they think other people think the only purpose in life is to take care of number one. And everybody else get out of their way to take care of themselves. So, I mean, this is a world of great diversity, right? But as in the past, where that might have been a source of suffering to us. How can this person be the way they are? How can these people be the way they are? And it sort of becomes a place of anger and inner mental anguish, right? Unsettling, keep us up at night, whether it's one person or whether it's a group of people. When there's understanding and spaciousness around that, we understand that things are just the way they are. People are the way they are. And of course, if I understood this person or these group of people, if I really had their value system and saw the world the way they did it, and had their upbringing and you know, and all their conditioning, I can certainly understand why they are the way they are. And if I had had the same experiences in life, I'd probably be just like them. Right? So that creates spaciousness. Right? One understands the nature of this unfolding world instead of imposing. It shouldn't be this way, right? People shouldn't think this way, should they? Right? In my world, where I am the ruler, no one would be allowed to think this way. Right? Isn't that true? Isn't that the way we think? But of course, the problem is that those other people think the same way. So the solution is what? How do I get rid of you? Or how do you get rid of me? Or how do I convert you? Or how do you convert, you know what I mean? So it becomes a world of what? Intolerance, conflict. Right? As opposed to where, you know, another way, which is what? I can understand why you see things the way you do. I may not agree with you, but I understand. You know, are you interested in learning about the way I see it? Maybe we can, you know, talk together and understand each other better. It's a strange thought, isn't it? Right? In this world today. But again, we need to learn to act that out on a very personal basis in our life, in our work, in our relationships. So if there's somebody that we don't like, then we should look into what it is that's bringing that up, and what is it about that my not liking them, which is really about not understanding and not accepting. It still doesn't mean I have they, you know, I want to be best friends with them. Right. Do you want to be best friends with everybody? Do you want to invite everybody over for dinner? No. Right? But that doesn't mean that we have to hate or dislike or be intolerant of.
Letting go seems compassionate.
Yeah, letting go is compassionate. Because it understands even that many people act the way they do because they suffer. Because their minds are not at ease. Because their minds are afire with anger or fear. So many people, their minds are afire with fear and worry and anger and jealousy. And you go, wow, you know, these people are suffering. I mean, when you look at life that way, you see even, you know, many of the people that are held up, you know, the great people who are whose life is all about power, or life is about accumulation, or life is about money, you know, things. Might go, yeah, I would never want to be there, because when you go inside their minds, they don't have minds that are at ease. They don't have minds that are at peace. They don't have minds that are open and loving and caring and compassionate. Right? And so, you know, from a Buddhist point of view, people like that are deluded because they are so skewed in what they think this life is about. And the paths they pursue will never give them happiness. How do we know it won't give them happiness? Because they have to keep pursuing it. Every day, it's a new day to fight. Every day, it's a new day to accumulate. So we know that's not a mind at ease. Other questions? Yes.
Christina is joining us online, and she has a question for you. She said, you mentioned that our thoughts are not real, are not substantial, but what about our emotions? I see them come and go. But when they're present, they feel real.
Again, the question is, somebody's asking, well, I heard you talk about thoughts. not being real, but are emotions the same? Because they certainly feel real. Again, we have to understand we're talking in words, right? I'm talking in words. These things I'm saying, we call them words. Is that clear? So you're listening now to my words. Words are pointers at experience, right? So if I say the word flower, that's a word, right? Flower, flower, flower. That doesn't mean there's a flower up here, does it? Right? I'm saying flower. That's just a word. That's what I'm talking about. That's reality. Words are not real. So, but even in Buddhism, when we say this flower is real, we're only saying what? It has a temporary reality and it's appearing right now this way. But in truth, again, it's not real in an intrinsic way. Because if we came back here a week from now, it would not look like this, would it? So we would say, you may have ever heard in the Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. See, that's what it means. That the world of form, this world that we see, it looks real, doesn't it? It appears real. But yet, if one looks more deeply into it, one sees that this reality is just, the way it appears right now, is only temporary, right? So even if we came back here an hour, this place would be empty. So even this gathering right now, while it's real in this moment, there's no solidity to it. Is that clear? So that's when in Buddhism we say things appear, but they're really not. Is everybody with me? Good. It's really quite kind of simple, but it's very different. So when we say thoughts aren't real, that doesn't mean that when they appear, their appearance doesn't have a temporary reality, right? Well, of course they do. In other words, for the last, it may seem like endless, but let's say for the last 45, 50 minutes, you have been listening to me speak words, right? Well, where are those words? They're gone. In their moment of appearance, they have a reality, but then they're gone. So we would say, oh, in their appearance, they're real, but in truth, they have no intrinsic reality, solidity. Is that clear? All right. Thoughts and feelings are the same way. When one looks at a feeling, whether it is a feeling of happiness, or whether it's a feeling of sadness, whether it is a feeling of joy, or whether it is a feeling of fear, whatever that feeling, when we are just in its thrall, it feels what? Solid. But the truth is, we know it is not solid, is it? It is temporary. It will pass. But even more than that, if you enter it, you will find there's nothing there. It's the same way when we're down here on the ground and we look up, we see clouds. And to the eye, how do they look? They look like a solid thing, don't they? We say, what? Look at the clouds. Wow. It's like there's a ceiling. But anybody who's ever flown in a plane through clouds, what do we find out? There's nothing there. Right? It appeared solid, but there was nothing solid there. Right? If one knows that, like one's a pilot, and one knows that, one then can do what? Fly right through them. One is no longer scared of them, no longer sees them as solid. There's no danger. The feelings are the same way. They just come and go. They come according to causes and conditions. A lot of time the causes are because of external conditions. A lot of time, frankly, these days, for most people, their emotional life is based on their thoughts, the way they're thinking about something. So they have a certain kind of emotion that arises. If they change the way they're thinking, their thoughts, their feelings will change. But even if it's a real situation, like a scary situation where there's real danger or a sad situation, somebody's really suffering or something, you know, again, that will pass. It's only in response to a situation. That's just part of being a human being. Yes, you have a question.
On the subject of letting go,
yes.
A family member, you know, it's a little bit harder to let go in a way if a family member is, you know, hindering your growth. Is there a way that they might not be hindering your growth and you just...
Well, let's just see. What's your name?
Kate.
So Kate. Kate?
Kate.
Kate. So Kate, see, even with the way you just said it, right, you said, well, with family members, it's really harder, isn't it? Well, you see how you've already set it up that way? It's really not any harder or easier. Now, without going too much into it, so let's talk abstractly. So there's a family member that's trying to do what to another family member?
Just, you know, it's my father.
Yeah.
I'm kind of exploring new routes in my life, mm-hmm. and being a Christian man, he has set ways, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of flying the nest and mm-hmm. Taking, you know, his wisdom, but also recognizing that there are some wisdoms that I don't want to take. So letting go, loving him as my father, but also trying to let go in the way that I understand that he's affecting me in a way I don't want to feel, or
he doesn't have that power, Katie. He doesn't have that power. Because those feelings are arising where? In you. Is that clear? So he can be who he is. Right? It sounds like you understand who he is. You understand his background, you understand his belief system, you understand his goodness and his fear about, you know, his daughter leaving, right? So you can understand all that, right? And so therefore, you can understand why he says or does certain things in relationship to his daughter. Can you understand that? Okay. That's understanding. You're not thinking he's a bad person, you're not angry at him. You understand, yeah, that's who he is, and he can't help being who he is. That's because of that understanding, you are not attached to him, you know. Because if you would say, oh no, I really would love a father who has his own belief system, but is very accepting and open to me. Wouldn't you like that? Yeah, but that's not real, is it, Katie? You see? And we want to come to reality as he is who he is. And you can, if you give up your attachment to wanting him to be different, which is very similar to his attachment to wanting you to be different. Can you see? It's we're doing the same thing. So, but you can't control him to be open like you can. No. The same way you don't like him to want to control you to be certain ways closed the way he is. So, if you can accept him for who he is, understanding, because you understand him, and you understand he cannot help at this point reacting to your exploration with fear or whatever it is, okay, you accept it. That allows your heart to be free and not to be angry or not to be disappointed. You understand he can't help it, right? And then, you know, the other thing is, you know, can you feel, right, good about being Katie, and that whatever your exploration is in life is coming from a good place, and you can accept that too. You see, that's the other piece. Can you accept yourself as you are? Right? So you have those two. And again, you know, he's not ready to accept you, but you can accept him. And maybe one day, you know what I'm saying, maybe one day he will change or maybe not. But again, if you don't turn it into a source of confidence, he may. Right? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? You can't control that. But from your point of view, if you really stay open to him and try to explain to him what he's doing, and at the same time understand that he may not be able to cure you because he's not you. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yeah. So it is 10 of 12. There's a wonderful Zen saying that I've always appreciated for many years. Every day is a good day when nothing stays in the mind. Please take that home. Every day is a good day when nothing stays in the mind. Things happen. Good things happen, bad things happen. Things that we want happen, things that we don't want happen. Just the way it is. And if we cannot make stories and dramas and melodramas and obsessions about it, and, you know, just let things be. And every day is a good day. You don't have emotional affliction. There's nothing weighing you down.